It is my pleasure to welcome, for the first time to Many Rivers Books and Tea, Zakiya Murray, author of Mindfulness in the Garden, Zen Tools for Digging in the Dirt, this lovely, charming book. She is a registered landscape architect and Masters of Divinity graduate from Meru Interfaith Seminary at the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment located in San Jose, California. She regularly teaches meditation classes for the community as well as outreach programs. She also teaches 9 to 12-year-old kids the martial art of Aikido, whose goal is the harmonious resolution of conflict. In addition to being a graduate of Meru Interfaith Seminary, she is also a member of the Order of Interbeing in the lineage of Thich Nhat Hanh, presumably why the estimable Thich Nhat Hanh has a foreword to this book here. So we are delighted to welcome you here, and thank you for coming and being our ultimate speaker of 2012.
Thank you, Rob, and thank you, Jim. You know, it was several months ago, many months ago, actually, I walked in and very humbly asked Jim, he was here at the desk, how does one go about setting up an event? And we started this dialogue, and he went through the normal, I'm sure, regime of what he would tell someone who walks in the door, and I then slowly slid Mindfulness of the Garden across the counter to him. He's like, oh, you have a book. So we were sort of off and running at that point, and we made an appointment tentatively then, and we just moved forward, and so here we are on December 13th, and I'm very grateful to be here. I would like to begin a little bit with just a short led meditation. I'll walk you through just to really allow ourselves to arrive and enjoy each other's company and ourselves. So if you feel comfortable to placing your feet on the ground, and then if you have anything on your lap, if you can put that aside. And also if you feel comfortable to close your eyes, that's also a nice thing to do if you're comfortable to do that. So as we allow ourselves to feel the support of chairs beneath our bodies, our feet on the ground, our presence here in the room, we begin to pay attention to our breath, following it in and out of the body, really allowing ourselves to arrive. Trusting that whatever is meant to be received by us this evening, we will receive. Whatever blessing there is in this evening will be given freely. As we breathe in and out, we feel the ease of simply allowing what is to be. No pushing, no striving, simply being. This is one of the things that nature does so beautifully for us. It is a mirror of simply being that which it is. So may we allow ourselves this evening to simply be that which we are. Comfortable in our skin, comfortable in the room, just free to be who we are. And as we accept ourselves, we also accept the others here with us. simply allowing others to also be that which they are. So expressing gratitude for our time together this evening, before it even begins, knowing that our presence here is a gift in and of itself. May we enjoy each other. May we enjoy the words that we hear and that we share. Om, peace. Amen. I'd like to begin sharing a little bit about how the book began. And, you know, it's really hard to trace because it really is sort of my whole life kind of coming into this book. I loved nature from the very moment that I was, I think, born. And my first chores as a child were to do the gardening in the yard. And I didn't really think of it much as a chore at all. I would go out, there was this really beautiful row of silvery Russian olives in our backyard, and that's where I would always start. It was the very far back corner, and I would always start there. And I just loved the feeling when I would weed all of the, you know, pull all the weeds that were at the base of those trees, and then I could look at that really smooth brown soil that was at their feet, and it just made me feel so good. And this particular love of nature that I had continued all the way through into college, where I went to school as a landscape architect, and I got then the pleasure of designing people's gardens, and just really, really loved the work of landscape architecture. It's both left and right brain. There's the nice architecture that the left brain gets to do, and then there's this really lovely creative right brain aspect to it as well. And so the way that Mindfulness in the Garden is written is as if you are walking yourself through the creative process from the moment that you were actually to have a piece of land or a simple pot or planter box that you're working with. And it walks you all the way through the creative process from designing to actually constructing and planting your garden, then to harvesting its fruit. And the nice thing about that is you could... What I have done with each of the activities that you would do is I've written a short gata, what's called a gata, or a short prayer or intention that we can bring our attention to as we're doing that particular activity. Helps us to stay present. That's really the main aspect and reason for the gata, is to keep us actively paying attention to what it is we're doing in that very moment. And so each activity has one of these short gatas, and I'll be reading those to you this evening, several of them that I've sort of chosen on my way over. Actually, I marked them with little bubblegum wrappers. What I have found when I speak with people too is that it's something that I really just have to let flow and be very spontaneous in the moment. So I hope you'll bear with me as I just let whatever's supposed to happen here happen. I very much enjoy that process. And so I'm looking forward to sharing the gathas with you. The first one that I'd like to share with you is called Looking at a Tree. And it came to me based on an experience that I had when I was in my early 20s, and I was at a friend's house, and his grandparents had this beautiful pine tree grove that they were growing, and they had pruned all of the pines up to about 6 feet tall. And I was about the same height that I am now, so I could stand under there without bending down. And I remember at one point I was under the trees and I just sort of stopped. And there was this very, very profound silence under those trees. I don't know if you've ever had that experience, if you've been in the redwoods or been in the forest in general, and you just had this moment where you actually get sort of this palpable, visceral, felt sense of the silence that's there in the trees. And so that's the inspiration for this very first gatha that I'd like to share with you. And then following each gatha then also is an explanation of how we might apply the gatha during our time doing whatever it is we happen to be doing. And here we'd be looking at a tree, and what is it that we might learn from that experience and glean from it. Looking at a tree. Looking deeply at the tree, I feel its presence. In its stillness, I find my true being. Looking deeply at the tree, I feel its presence. In its stillness, I find my true being. The wind-blown architecture of a cypress tree growing at the ocean's edge does not judge how our hair looks in the morning. Instead, it can remind us of the elegant beauty that appears when we allow nature to sculpt us. The clouds in the sky do not begrudge us our moods, but instead they model for us a way to simply be with what is and express it completely as they move from bright billowy white to the soggy drab gray foretelling of rain's arrival. Our tears become the rain falling from their tender underbellies. The wily pumpkin stealthily growing on the top of the fence does not complain that it is not on the ground with its brothers and sisters, but grows courageously where it finds itself. Nature just is, and it teaches us how to simply be. Nature is the master of being. It knows nothing other than to simply be itself, vast, infinite, and unconditional. If we want to learn how to be, we need to spend time with the master. Looking deeply at a tree, branches reaching toward the sky, trunk straight and strong, roots winding deeply into the ground, we feel its presence, and we honor its place in our garden. Becoming still like the tree, our thoughts can be left at the garden's gate, and we can simply be ourselves. Here comes a bubblegum wrapper one. Oh, you know what? Before I go on, I would really like to show you a couple of lovely illustrations by Jason DeAntonis. This is one of my favorites. And these are woodblock carvings. It's a little sprout coming up from the ground, if you can see it. I'm not sure. They're just so lovely. I actually had the opportunity to do a reading with Jason at Mrs. Dalloway's in Berkeley. And so it was lovely to see like the life-size drawings. I'll show you a couple of others later on, but here's a really nice one. It's one of my favorites. It's the hands digging in the dirt and beginning to plant seeds. So just really, really beautiful artwork. I couldn't have asked for a more beautiful representation of the work. So. This next gatha and reading comes from an experience that I had with a good friend of mine, her name is Lynn. She has a beautiful backyard garden, and I was working out with her in the garden, and so we walk out into the garden, and there's sort of this path through all of these things happening in the garden, and she leads me to the very back corner of her garden, and there she introduces me to her Cecil Bruner rose that has gone crazy. And she says, "Can you prune this for me?" And you know, I'm thinking, okay, that's a monster. How do I do that? And she's like, prune it hard. Don't be afraid, the Cecil Bruner will come back. And it needs actually to be pruned like that because it grows and flowers off of new growth. So prune it back really hard, and then it will be back up on the fence before you know. So this particular Gothic came from that experience. And, you know, for me, it was really, I was learning the whole time I was there, like, how do you interact with this thing that has thorns all over it and continue to be able to move? And so I was watching all of my movements and really paying attention. And, you know, I think that that's a really valuable thing, that even if we're in a difficult situation, I'm actually talking to the 9 to 12 year olds all the time in Aikido about this, is to not avoid those things that are difficult or bring up frustration in us. To actually go ahead and be with them. They're the things that kind of push us to grow and to find out who we really are. So this is sort of about facing those things that aren't always that comfortable to face, and how do we do that? It's called the point of pruning. When I prune, I remove the old. In its place, new life grows. When I prune, I remove the old. In its place, new life grows. Pruning can seem an overwhelming task, especially when we are standing face to face with a Cecil Bruner rose. Its thorns thick with age, and its canes arching wildly over the neighbor's 8-foot fence and onto his garage, we choose to see the rose as a formidable obstacle that needs to be tamed, or as a great opportunity to make real space in our garden and ourselves. Not to mention, we can see it as an opportunity to make peace with our neighbor, who has long tolerated our unruly rose growing and climbing in his yard. The trepidation of facing the thorns of the Cecil Bruner can be lessened if we understand why we are pruning it. Understanding the rose will only bloom on new growth gives our pruning real purpose. Wanting her to bloom radiantly, we address Cecil Bruner's overgrown branches, not hesitating to really prune them hard into the heavy old wood. We bend and move slowly and mindfully in accordance with the direction and the placement of the rose's thorns and wiry canes to avoid getting completely entangled in them as we work. Bravely pruning into the rose's old growth gives it the chance to bloom magnificently again in the spring, nature's reward for our mindful labors. Pruning is a process of removing the old so that the new can have a space to grow and to bloom. Courage is needed as we let go of the old and known for the new and unknown. Once again, our garden can be a wonderful mirror of our inner emotional terrain. Are there thought processes, habitual actions, or stories we tell ourselves that are not viable, healthy, or true anymore? Do we hold on to old behaviors and ways of being that no longer serve us? This is our very own old growth, accumulated over many years. Mindfully pruning the Cecil Bruner in our garden, we can prune away the old stuck patterns inside of ourselves as well, opening space for the sprouts of new qualities such as clarity, peace, calmness to grow and take root within our being. Our stories, the inner turmoil that happens in our minds when we do not understand the true nature of a situation, are like the thorns of the rose. The more we move around inside the thoughts of our stories, the more we get caught up on their edges and thorns. If we continue in this way for long, movement by movement, our sweatshirt that was meant to protect us gets tangled up in the old growth of our preconceived ideas. Hardly able to move, we miss the present moment altogether. With our mindfulness, however, We can prune our attention away from our stories. Bravely pruning hard into our old growth, we can remove the old canes and thorns of our wrong perceptions and misunderstandings, opening ourselves to the vast space of the present reality. Free of the tenacious grasp of our stories, we can fill ourselves with the freshness of the movement, and our new growth will bring us beautiful flowers of peace and clarity. Something that came to me to share with you as I was reading the last part of that, this last one. You know, as we let go of our stories and how there's this space that opens up. I went on this walkabout in New Zealand for a month, and the first evening there was a shaman that went with me, and he gave me some assignments to do, and he had spent a year in the bush himself. And one of the things that he wanted me to do, of many, was to really learn the land, and to move on the land on my belly and on my back and in the dark and all kinds of things. Well, there was this animal that was growling at me in the middle of the night, so I didn't want to be walking out at night and make that animal, and I never did see the animal growl anymore, any more upset than it already was with my presence there. So I decided to create darkness during the daytime by walking blindfolded, and I began a very, very sincere practice of walking blindfolded and barefoot every day for about 3.5 hours. And the reason I wanted to share this with you is because there initially were so many stories going on in my mind and so much fear going on that my legs shook. I mean, I would, you know, it was hard for me to make the next step, you know, and then I would sort of make the next one. And then slowly I learned to get more comfortable. And there was a point where I had gotten very, very quiet inside. I wasn't speaking with anyone. I was the only person in the bush. And I was just there. And I reached out for this palm frond that I had used many times to sort of stabilize myself. So by this time I knew sort of where it was. And as I leaned down, all of a sudden I was experiencing that forest as if I was walking inside of myself. And the impact that that had on me, first of all of my stories had to leave in order for that to occur. And second of all was that I felt absolutely, completely safe. There was no fear present whatsoever. And you know, because of that, the profoundness of that experience, I wept in that moment, and it stayed with me for the rest of my time and has really profoundly impacted myself and my life. And it just was one of those light bulb moments where the stories dropped away and there was this space that I perceived myself to be, and just really, really powerful. So that also comes into sort of pruning away. You know, as I took my sight away, a lot of what the stories were that I had that my eyes would tell me were gone, right? So I was there just in the silence and learning a whole different language. So it was really, really profound. The next gatha and last gatha I'd like to share with you this evening before I open to questions, it is about when our gardens don't grow, when something doesn't grow. You know, I think it's a really unique opportunity for us to grow ourselves when something just doesn't really go our way. And we have lots of opportunities in our garden, whether it's a gopher that's eating the roots and we don't get a chance to enjoy the chard that we planted, or if, you know, we plant blue beets, and I talk about them in here a little bit, and they just don't grow, and we don't know why. those kinds of things. And this, again, it sort of reminds me of working with the kids and how I encourage them to stay with those edges, not to allow them to scare them away or to get so frustrated that they just don't want to do it anymore, but to just really stay engaged with life. And so that's what I think when our gardens don't do exactly what we want them to do, I think we're being beckoned into that present moment to really engage and understand what the soil is telling us, what the wind is telling us, just exactly what is that language and how do we begin to discern that language. So this gatha is called When Seeds Don't Grow. Sometimes, even with mindfulness, my garden fails to thrive. With breath, mind, and hands free, the seed of my equanimity emerges. Sometimes, even with mindfulness, my garden fails to thrive. With breath, mind, and hands free, the seed of my equanimity emerges. Gardening is a great exploration and an adventure. And no matter how thoughtful and careful we may be, it is unavoidable that some aspects of our vision and dream for our land will not thrive. Our failures often tell more about ourselves than any success ever will. I'm going to read that one again. Our failures often tell more about ourselves than any success ever will. The ego, cunning as it is, can gracefully disguise itself as even-mindedness in the sugary sweet praise that lies in the wake of our success. However, the depth and truth of who we really are reveals itself perhaps more in our response to our challenges. Obstacles and challenges in our gardening keep us humble. They are good medicine, helping us to become more authentic. When taken in the proper way, challenges can snap us back to our senses. Learning, specifically learning from adverse conditions, helps us and keeps us alive, growing, and it keeps us real. When the blue beets we planted in our garden do not take root, we learn something about our beets and ourselves. How we respond to the challenges of our garden teaches us about ourselves. Do we meet the perceived failure with animosity, or do we turn to the situation with compassion and ask for greater insight? Can we take a step back? Can we see with the eyes of dispassion and simply note what is without having to find blame or pointing our finger, not even at ourselves? When we slow down and coordinate our breath with our observations regarding the life of our garden or the lack thereof, we experience a little bit of distance, a little breathing room around the situation. In the space of this breath, our mind frees up and our ego loses its grip on us. We come to understand that how we respond to the situation is more important than the situation itself. And it is our choice how we respond. We come to understand that how we respond to the situation is more important than the situation itself. And it is our choice how we respond. Our reaction and the focus of our attention are really all we ever have control over in any situation. Resting in just what is, without rendering it good or bad, opens us to possibility and leaves the palate of our mind free to receive what our garden is telling us about its soil, its water, its sun, and its plants. Garden and gardener deepen in their witnessing and knowing of one another. So thank you for the opportunity to read and share a little bit of Mindfulness in the Garden with you. I'd like to just open it up to questions, if you have questions, and just hear a little bit from you about your experience and just share together. Yes, I see a couple people here.
I love the garden myself, and one of the things that occurred to me is that as when you're reading your last gatha, that that's that the challenges are a wonderful opportunity, but so is the always unexpected exuberance of the garden mm-hmm. as well. In other words, things end up growing much like the rose you talked about yeah. in your neighbor's yard or friend's yard. Mm-hmm. That there's an extraordinary exuberance that nature can manifest, which is as much a teacher mm-hmm. as the challenges. So could you talk about that a little bit in your experience?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think that the beautiful volunteer that shows up in the garden and teaches us what will actually grow there, it's such a gift. And to me, it's an example of the way in which life supports us in ways that we're not even aware that it's going to. It shows up as it's a surprise rose that's actually growing, and we never did a thing to help it grow. It shows up as the little sapling oak tree that has this really great space to grow, and we can let it grow and do that. Or flowers and or fruits that birds are planting for us. So those are ways in which, as we find those gifts, just really embracing what is without having to plan it all out, without it all having to be in our control. I think that when we can allow those surprises and embrace those surprises, we're learning to allow and embrace surprises and gifts, and we're learning to receive in an entirely different way. So, yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. In my kitchen, I have a little compost container, and above it, a paper that says, let's see if I can get this right. The poor farmer grows weeds, the mediocre one grows crops, the good farmer grows soil. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could talk about soil and the importance of it.
Absolutely. There's a whole section in here about that too, and having to do with compost being the actual heart of the garden, and it's what makes everything go. Actually, I might even jump in and read just a little bit from that section if you don't mind, because it's one of the ones that I often read. Yeah. It's called Full Circle Compost. Compost expresses as a circle. Life begets death begets life. I look deeply into the mounds of decay and see life living in its fold. Compost expresses as a circle. Life begets death begets life. I look deeply into the mounds of decay and see life living in its fold. Deep in our compost pile, the never-ending cycle of life and death takes place at an accelerated rate in the mounding up of layers of raw leftovers and dead leaves. We find life embedded within the rich, fertile rot of our compost. Living in the darkness at the bottom of our compost, microscopic organisms consume the skulls and hulls of our last garden and transform them into new life. There, lying in the belly of our compost, is an opportunity to take a sincere look at the impermanence of all things. Nature is impermanence in action. It knows the unspoken richness found living in the mouth of decay. Death, the fecundity of rot, is nature's muse, beckoning new life into the smelly layer of its decomposing layers. We learn from nature's contentment with death and dying, and we begin to see death as simply a part of life as we witness our compost pile. And then there's a one gatha in here that's called Dirt Poor to Filthy Rich. So it's all part of that whole concept of the soil becoming very rich and starting out, not having those nutrients, but as we add and feed it our compost, it becomes very rich, and as do we become very rich. So thank you for that.
Thanks.
Asking that. Yeah. Sure. Anyone else? Questions, comments, sharings? Sure.
I was just looking at the metaphor of landscape architecting.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at the moment as the garden, and that everything we say and don't say, everything that we do and don't do, it's all like managing the garden. So I was just looking at how all of these things fit into the garden of the moment.
How all of the way in which we are being, our thoughts, words, and actions, how they fit into the garden.
All of it.
Mm-hmm.
All of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, there was a quote that came to me, and I'm not going to totally get it right, and I had it on my mirror for a long time, and I think his name is Irwin. And it goes something like, always present, never twice the same. Always changing, never less than whole. It sort of captures sort of what it feels like you're beginning to touch on. Yeah, it just is, that's the way in which the garden shows up. It's constantly changing, as are we, but that's the way nature shows up for us too. It's always changing.
Never twice the same.
Yeah. It's always present, never twice the same. Always changing, never less than whole. You know, and that's exactly the process that we're in, you know, and who we are and how we change and how our thoughts and words and actions grow. And, you know, as we grow in depth, same thing is happening in our garden and the diversification of the gardens as well.
Thank
you. Yeah. Well, if that's all the questions.
Yeah,
go ahead. Sure.
How about weeds and metaphor? Pulling weeds and the weeds of the mind.
Yeah. Again, it's in the book too. Very important. And I want to share with you why. Actually, the beginning of the actual book, the actual writing of the book, came at a time where I had been unemployed as a landscape architect for about 2 years. And I found myself working on a friend's wetland project, and she had asked me to pull English thistle, and I was pulling English thistle like hours every day, and I had literally chosen not to just go out and try to make money. I wanted to use my time that I had not only to look for work but also to do work that was benefiting nature and projects, not just about money. And so there I was, you know, big rash on my arms and bruises from the thorns. I mean, it was a very tenacious deal. And I actually began to say things like, I'm going to write a book about the wisdom of weeds.
Mm-hmm.
And because part of it was really learning how to be with the thistle. And to me, what the weeds are doing, there's a couple of things that happen. The first thing is, as we clear the weeds, we're clearing our minds. We're letting the mind settle. But I think the other thing, too, is in learning how to deal with the weeds, because there was a way in which I had to grab the thistle around the base, and really, all of the thorns sort of go in the same direction. I don't know if you've really looked at thistle, but there is a way in which you can grab it without getting stuck by the thorns. But then you can't grab too hard, but you can't be too soft, or you're not going to get the whole thing, right? So in this way, I was just thinking about how that represents how we stay with the more difficult emotions that come up in us, such as anger or jealousy, the things that we're pretty uncomfortable with that have a lot of their own thorns. And so I go into a lot about what that relationship is and how when we're working in our gardens, we learn how to be firm but and very present while removing those things from their very roots. So that's sort of the process symbolically for me about weeding. It's also not negating the value of the weed itself too, because then once it's pulled, you can actually put it in your compost pile and it adds nutrients back to the soil that other things cannot add. So they have a lot of benefit. There was somebody else too telling me, this is kind of a funny story, I was doing a reading in Capitola, and the woman told me that, I think it was the Scottish, who used to use the thistle as part of their defense when they were fighting a war. They would literally hide behind the thorns. So there's sort of this barricade that thorns can also be in protecting us too. So we want to see whether or not that's something we actually want in our lives or not. But that was also kind of an interesting thing about thistle that I hadn't known that I got to learn while I was doing the reading. So thanks for the question. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To follow up on that, one of the big topics for people interested in local environments, wherever they are on the planet at this point, and gardening, is the introduction of non-native species from different areas,
right,
and the various challenges that creates. And of course, it's not just the plant garden; it's the animals,
yeah,
animal populations as well.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is look at the wild turkeys around here in Sonoma County as they proliferated so almost unimaginably quickly in just like a dozen years.
Mm.
To see that. So I'm wondering how you play with these with this dialectic of what wasn't here has strong effects now that it is here, and the same thing is happening in other places throughout the planet as we're moving ourselves and taking things with us, either inadvertently or deliberately.
Right. Yeah, I think that takes me back to the wetland project, because that's indeed why I was removing the thistle, was because it's not a native. And so there wasn't anything about thistle itself other than it wasn't a native, and we were planting California blue oak grass and things like that. And it was amazing to me how different it felt to walk on where the native plants were and where they weren't, just energetically. It just totally felt different. So, as an architect, as a landscape architect, I very much work to... it's a delicate balance between preserving what a client would feel is sacred to them and what's native. And so it's sort of this educational process, this sort of give and take. And so you do, for me, practicing, I do as much as I can to listen deeply to the client and to really hear what's on their heart about what's in their garden already, and to work within that, and then encouraging them to move in the direction of natives and the things that will sustain themselves excuse me, over time. So it's sort of a, I hold it delicately and walk softly and listen carefully, I think is probably.
And pull thistles carefully.
And pull thistles very carefully too, yes. Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Water's a big one for me.
Yeah.
As a gardener, it's a big one. I haven't really thought about metaphorically.
Some
metaphors about the water in the garden.
Yeah, it's in the book. No, it is in the book. It is actually in the book. I did write about water, and it has to do with how, one, there's an encouragement to water our gardens by hand at least once a week. What that does is it really gets us in tune with what we're doing, where the water is going, how it moves on the land, what plants are accepting it, how the plants look. It slows us down a little bit. So if we can take that time, I definitely make the encouragement for that. I think, you know, the metaphor for water is wisdom. Water is just wise, and that it goes wherever it goes, however it goes there, and the reason, one of the reasons that it becomes wise in my mind, and that I wish to share through the book, is that it has been used so many times. It is a sort of a one of those things that can change its form. So it's in the earth feeding the plant materials, then it becomes the turgor pressure of the plant itself, then it enters our body and gives our bodies water, and then it goes and evaporates from our skin as perspiration, and then it becomes the clouds again. You know, that's why our tears become the tender underbellies of the clouds, and that's part of what I'm beginning to point at there, is this cyclical pattern and the wisdom that's carried in water, and how many times has the water that we're drinking today been drunk before, and by whom? And what, you know, it's just that really neat way to start breaking down our separation from everything that is, and it gets really clear, you know, that water that I drank this morning is giving me the hydration to speak with you this evening and share and be here, and the same is true for all of you. And so it's a very unifying element, in that our bodies are highly, percentage of our bodies are made up of it. And it's so universal and so present in everything. So, yeah, thank you. So if that's it, I'd like to just say a brief prayer, expressing some gratitude, and then allow Rob the opportunity to, and or Jim, to do a closing. So. Beloved One, Spirit, God, Higher Power, whatever it is, the word that we use for the source of all of life and all that is, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for this time together this evening. May we feel the blessings that we have received. May we allow them to enter into our hearts and live there softly. May their seeds be watered, and may they grow from us, and may we share them freely with others as we allow our blessings to be like a pebble in a pond, expanding out in concentric circles. Thank you again. Om Shanti, peace. Amen. Thank you.
And on behalf of Many Rivers, thank you so much.
You're welcome. So.